Chapter 36. You want us to flee and you won't say why? Is that supposed to impress me? Lord Vass asked. 300 soldiers had gathered in the dark courtyard. The moon, a sliver in a night sky aflame with stars. 300 soldiers dressed for battle, bundled against the fierce cold that had already descended on these mountains, though summer's heat had barely lost its edge in Cenaria City. 300 soldiers and their commander, who wasn't Solon. 300 men who were watching the exchange between Solon and Liros Vass.
I admit, Solon said quietly, that it sounds weak. But I only ask for a day. We leave for one day, and then we come back. If I'm wrong, it's not like there are any looters who will have taken anything. We're the only people in these godforsaken mountains aside from the Highlanders, and they haven't raided the wall in 3 years.
It's abandoning our post, the young lord said. We're sworn to hold this wall.
We have no post, Solon snapped. We have no king. We have no lord. We have 300 men and an occupied country. Our oaths were to men now dead. Our duty is to keep these men alive so they can fight when we have a chance. This isn't the kind of war where we gloriously charge the enemy lines with our swords waving.
Lord Vass was young enough that he flushed with anger and embarrassment. Of course, that was exactly the kind of war he had in mind, and it had been a mistake to belittle it. How long had it been since Solon had lost those illusions of war? The men weren't moving a muscle, but they all saw the anger on Lord Vass's face, the red made redder in the flickering torchlight.
If you would have us leave, I demand to know why, Lord Vass said. A contingent of Caladoran elites, known as the Soul Sworn, is coming. They're bringing the Caladoran goddess Kali to Cenaria. They'll attack the wall at the witching hour.
And you want to leave? Vass asked, incredulous.
Do you know what it will mean when we capture the Caladoran's goddess? It will destroy them. It will give our countrymen hope. We'll be heroes. This is the place to stop them. We have the walls, the traps, the men. This is our chance. This is just what we've been waiting for.
Son, this goddess.
Solon gritted his teeth.
We're not talking about capturing a statue. I think she's real.
Liros Vass looked at Solon, first incredulous, then indulgent.
If you need to run away, you go ahead. You know where the road is.
He chuckled, giddy with his own grandeur. Of course, I can't let you go until you give me my gold back. If Solon told him where his gold was now, Vass would have his men go get it immediately. Dorian would be left helpless.
To hell with you,
Solon said.
And to hell with me too.
We'll die together.
Sister Ariel Wyand sat 5 paces from the first magical boundary that separated the Iosian forest from the oak grove. For the past 6 days, she'd had her eye on what appeared to be a plaque 20 feet inside the forest. It didn't look like it had been there long. Undergrowth hadn't covered it yet. Her first hope, in all her examinations of the ward, had been that Ezra had made the ward hundreds of years ago. With another magus, she would have expected the weaves to disintegrate after so much time. Weaves always disintegrated. But with Ezra, always didn't mean always. The proof shimmered just beyond mundane sight before her. The second hope was that, given Ezra's power and the power of the other magi of his era, it would be defending himself against opponents far more powerful than any alive today.
Sister Ariel didn't have the arrogance to think herself equal to those Ezra would have expected. She could only hope that her light touches against the weave would be beneath notice. Termites were tiny, but they'd destroyed many a mighty house. So, for 6 days, she examined and re-examined the weaves that divided the Iosian forest from the oak grove. It was as beautiful as a black widow's web. There were traps both large and small. There were weaves that were meant to tear apart the faintest touch, weaves that were meant to be unraveled, weaves that couldn't be broken with double Ariel's strength. And each had a trap. Ariel could guess exactly what Sister Jessie had done. She'd probably tried to conceal her talent. For the first day, it looked like a perfect strategy. It was a strategy that would have worked had Ezra been simple. Sister Jessie was weak enough that she could compress her talent and then shield it. That would make her talent invisible to other sisters or to male seers. Now there was a strange thought. How many times had talented women used exactly that strategy to hide themselves or their talented daughters from sisters who came to recruit for the chantry? Ariel shook her head. It wasn't time to get distracted. The problem was that Ezra's weaves didn't just register talent. As nearly as Ariel could tell, and she had to guess because of the complexity and delicacy of the weaves, Ezra's weaves detected mages' bodies. Everyone knew that mages were different from regular people, but not even healers today understood exactly how magic changed a mage's flesh. That it did so was undeniable. Mages aged differently, sometimes more slowly, the more talented they were, but sometimes not. Regardless, their very flesh was altered in subtle ways by their constant interactions with magic. Apparently, Ezra knew exactly what those ways were. Sister Ariel should have guessed that. Among no few other achievements, he had been a Salsalar, a lord of healing. He had created the Dark Hunter. Created a living being. Oh, Sister Jessie, did you walk right through this wall of magic? Did you really think yourself cleverer than Ezra himself? How many mages' bones litter this damned forest? She was letting her mind get off the problem at hand. She was still alive. She had made it past the first barrier. Now she needed to do something with that accomplishment. She needed to get that damned gold plaque. It was stuck, 20 feet away, just at the top of a small hillock. It was so close, and yet she had no hope of getting it. Her examination of Ezra's traps had left her convinced of it. It would take her years to dismantle his traps, years, if ever. Even if she had the time, she would never be sure that she hadn't missed something. She could never be sure how many other layers of protection were left. Ezra might have spun this ward in a few days. He might have intended that this lair be penetrated by weak mages. Sister Ariel could spend her whole life dismantling traps and never uncover Ezra's real secrets. If she'd come here as a younger woman, she might have thought it a worthy use of her life. But as a younger woman, she'd been much more idealistic. She'd believed in the chantry with the kind of foolish faith that most people reserve for their religion. If Ezra did possess devastatingly powerful artifacts, would Ariel really want to deliver those to the speaker? Would she trust Estariel with something that would multiply her power 10 times? Stop it, Ariel. You're letting your mind wander again. She looked at the plaque. Then she started laughing. It was so simple. She stood and started walking back to the village. She returned an hour later with a full stomach and a rope. Master Zorilat had been kind enough to show her how to make and throw a lasso. For the last 2 days, she'd wondered how to get the plaque, and for 2 days, she'd thought of only magical means. Stupid, stupid, stupid. The next several hours proved her clumsy as well. How many times in her life had she sneered at the men who worked the Chantry's stables? This was the kind of exercise every sister should be exposed to, in front of all the stable hands in the Chantry. The day ended, and she still hadn't lassoed the plaque. She did her cursing in the forest and went home. The next day she returned, her arm and shoulder aching. It took her another 3 hours, during which she cursed herself, cursed the rope, cursed Ezra, cursed her lack of exercise, and just cursed. But all silently. When the lasso finally dropped around the plaque, she could swear the gold glowed briefly. She wanted to extend her senses to see what had just happened, but it was too far away. She decided there was nothing to do but pull the damned thing in. At first, the plaque wouldn't move. It was somehow stuck. Then, as Ariel pulled, part of the hillock shifted and rolled over, freeing the plaque. It wasn't a hillock. It was Sister Jessie's body. She'd been dead for weeks. Mold grew over her bright robes, obscuring the bloodstains. It looked like a claw had torn away half of her head in a single terrible swipe. Since her death, no animals had disturbed her body. There were no bears or coyotes or ravens or other carrion feeders in Ezra's woods. But the worms were well into their work. Sister Ariel looked away, allowing herself a moment to be a woman, confronting an acquaintance's mutilated body. She breathed slowly, glad that Jessie's body was as far away as it was. She'd been this close for days, and she'd never even smelled decay. Was that a trick of the wind? Or magic? The plaque had been clutched in Sister Jessie's hands. Sister Ariel carefully walled up the emotions she felt and set them aside. She would examine them later, allow herself tears if tears must come. For now, she might be in danger. She looked at the plaque. It was too far away to tell what symbols, if any, were on its surface, but there was something about it that chilled her to the bone. The square plaque had hooks embedded in the rope. They looked as if they had formed when the lasso had landed to help her pull it out. She pulled the plaque close to the ward, but kept it on the far side. There was no telling what pulling something that might be magical through the barrier would do. The script was Gamitic, but Ariel found she remembered it surprisingly well. "If this is the fourth day, take your time. If it's the seventh, pull this through the ward now," the script said. The runes went on, but Ariel stopped and scowled. It wasn't at all the sort of thing someone would usually write on a plaque. She wondered to whom the words could possibly have been addressed. Perhaps this plaque had been part of some ancient test? A rite of passage for mages? How had Sister Jessie interpreted it? Why had she thought it was so important? She read on. "Days at the ward, horse face. You're a lousy throw, by the way." Ariel dropped the rope from nerveless fingers. She'd been called horse face when she was a tyro. She tried to translate the word another way, but the Gemitic runes made it clear that it was a personal name, a specific insult, not generic. Looking at the way the plaque had caught on the rope now, she was suddenly sure that it had grabbed the rope, as if it was sentient. The hooks weren't equally placed on opposite sides of the plaque. Instead, it was as if they had grown in response to the lasso's touch. The plaque glowed, and Sister Ariel stumbled backward in fright. It was a mistake. Her foot caught in a loop of the rope, and as she fell, she yanked the plaque through the ward. She scrambled to her feet as quickly as her fat limbs would lift her. The plaque was no longer glowing. She picked it up.
"Prophecy,"
it said, the Gemitic runes dissolving into common as she touched the plaque. "Not sentience." She swallowed, not sure she believed it. The script continued to appear before her as if written by an invisible quill. "If this is the seventh day, look 2 stadia south."
"Stadia?"
"Perhaps units of measure didn't translate. How far was 2 stadia? 300 paces? 400? Fear paralyzed Sister Ariel. She'd never been the type for adventures. She was a scholar, and a damned good one. She was one of the more powerful sisters, but she didn't like charging into things she didn't understand. She turned the plaque over.
"Woods and trees,"
Jesse Alguaden had written in a panicked hand. "Don't trust him."
Oh, perfect.
Sister Ariel was rooted to the ground. The words Sister Jesse had written could only have been written with magic. Surely Sister Jesse wouldn't have used magic inside the wood. It would have been suicide.
She is dead.
It could all be a trap. The plaque might have triggered something as it was pulled through the ward. There might be a trap in the trees to the south where the plaque was trying to get her to go. Maybe she should go write down everything, ignore the trap, play by her own rules. But Sister Ariel didn't go back to Taurus Bend to write in her journal. She'd studied the ward to the south. If there had been a trap, she'd already triggered it. There was a time and a place for haste. Apparently, that was now and here.